Full Full Colour from Benjamin Francis F, which is the latest single we've taken from the brand new album To Carry a Whale, which was released on Friday. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the man himself now. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure, sir. Let's get the pandemic question out of the way. Obviously, we're still in it with the latest announcement and everything. We're not quite out of the woods yet. I've spoken to some artists during the pandemic, and they've said that it's allowed them to sort of focus and become more creative. And others have said they've had an absolutely dreadful time. I mean, how's it been for you, I suppose, is the question.
It's a good question. I firstly just want to acknowledge, you know, that I've been very fortunate with the career I've had, and I was privileged before then, you know, and I definitely haven't felt the kind of day-to-day squeeze as much as billions of other people in the world. And for that, I'm privileged, lucky and grateful. Emotionally and spiritually, of course, you know, I found it really tricky and isolating and felt very lonely at times. And, you know, the short answer to your question is that the only silver lining for me was that there was nowhere else to run except into songwriting, which kind of, I think, speeded up To Carry a Whale together, you know, and it was a chance for reflection and a deepened kind of connection with my own craft of songwriting and my own recovery. So you know, it was a difficult time for many people at different levels. You
yeah.
Know?
Okay. I said at the start, you've just released your fourth album, To Carry a Whale. I mean, what was the genesis of this record?
The genesis was. That's a good question. I mean, I guess the song genesis was a song on the album called Canary in a Coal Mine, which is a song about, you know, finally being awake to life on life's terms and falling in love, you know, without anything in my system and experiencing, you know, like I said, life on life's terms, but also knowing that there's a danger with that and not to get over excited or think that I'm out of the woods, you know. And that's why the title of that song is Canary in a Coal Mine, because canaries are beautiful creatures. They're free to go into the mine, but it's a dangerous place to go. They're sent in first to check for poisonous gases. So it's kind of it was a reminder to myself in a way of just like, yo, Ben, like, yes, you're in a better place now, and you know one day at a time, you don't have to do what you were doing before, but you know, just to keep an awareness. And honestly, the true another answer to your question, what's the genesis of this album, is I love songs. You know, I've loved songs since before I knew what songs were. I love songs like when I was 6 years old, hearing Let It Be and being played in a house, and I have no idea what it was, but I knew I had a hole in my heart, and I knew the song while it was playing, that hole was filled. You know, so I will always love songs and want to play it. And want to play them and write them. And if I ever get to a point in my life where I feel like I don't have anything that I feel like I need to sing, then that'll be my time to bow out and go, I have nothing for you guys right now, you know? I don't think anyone wants to hear a song about, I'm just fine today, you know what I'm saying? And maybe some people do, I don't know. You know, I want happiness or sadness. I want the intensities of the emotions. That's what I love as a fan of music.
Okay. I mean, you've touched on sort of recovery and that, and it's been a decade since you released your debut album, and from what I understand, you've been through a journey since that. I mean, how different are you to the person that made Last Smoke Before the Snowstorm 10 years ago, or sort of released it 10 years ago?
I think at my core and at my kind of center and my kind of God self or spirit self or true self, I'm the same person, but the difference between then and now is I've removed the thing that was between me and that truth and that goodness that I believe everyone has in them, and that thing between me and that place of peace was really myself. You know, I know the listeners can't see me, but I'm doing like quotation marks. Myself, my own judgments, opinions, and self-centeredness kind of stood in the way of me being at peace and just being, you know, being a human being on this planet with how I was intended to be, you know, which is not to cause harm. The difference is I don't have, you know, an obvious difference is I don't have drugs and alcohol in my system every day, which I did for 7 of those 10 years. And also, like, on a technical level, I feel like, you know, I still have much to learn as an artist, but I think when an artist is young, and I was 20 years old, we kind of live in this myth that, like, the songs just land, anything I write is good, it just comes to me whenever, and I've learned to appreciate the craft of songwriting. You know, if you listen to interviews with James Taylor or these kind of legends or Carole King, people talk about the craft, the ability to spend all day on a song and then go at 6 p.m. go, man, we didn't even get close with the second verse. You know, I'm awake to go in and leave no stone unturned and pay the respect to my songs that I think they deserve from me, not from anyone else, but from me, you know, which is to stare them down and go, what have I missed here?
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's... I love that answer. I mean, I can't add any more to that. I mean, that's a stunning answer. And to actually, you know, appreciate the journey you've come on with your craft and actually look into that and say what you've just said is, yeah, that's inspiring for me. And I'm not even a musician. So thank you for that answer. I mean, one of the things that I read about the new album is that you've said that it's the best music you've ever made, but you've also said it's the most honest music you've ever made. I mean, how important to you is that honesty within your music?
I think it's really important. And obviously my own idea of honesty is kind of subjective to where I am in my life. I don't think that my first album was dishonest, but it would have been dishonest with me as a 31-year-old to try and make an album that I didn't really pretend that I didn't know what was going on and it's all feel and flow. You know, as long as I'm not in that place in my life, yes, feel and flow is essential in any creative endeavor. But I feel in a very different space creatively, and I think I'm less scared. You know, fear was it was an evil and corroding thread that shot through my entire existence. You know, fear, wanting to be loved by everyone, wanting to be super cool, what, you know, being too afraid to sing something like the song you know, you mentioned, like slipping through my fingers. I would, as a 20-year-old, I wouldn't have been brave enough to just sing. I've always felt like life was slipping through my fingers, even though it's exactly how I've always felt, you know. So I feel the honesty that I referred to in whatever interview I gave that quote was just that I feel like I'm not hiding anywhere in my personal life and in my musical life. In my experience, there's not, those two things are pretty much the same thing. You know, I've been taught by a kind fellowship of human beings around the world to follow certain suggestions that allow me to live in integrity and honesty and know that the outcome has nothing to do with me.
Okay. I mean, some of the songs you've written during your career that they've quite obviously touched on the pain that you've been through and the challenges that you've faced. And do you find the process, I mean, especially since you have been clean, do you find the process healing for you? Does it help to get those feelings and those thoughts out there?
Yeah, that's such a question that I've listened to other artists answer so much and been asked myself. And I don't know. I think I'm really lucky to have that outlet and privileged to have that outlet, be able to sit down with a guitar and play some chords and sing about how I'm feeling. I think it definitely helps me, but I think there's also a flip side of that coin as well, is that often during the creative process and the writing process of making an album, I'm revisiting painful memories, or either my own pain or other people's pain, which sometimes I've been the creator of, and I admit that. And it's, you know, I think young artists, and myself included, need to be careful to not romanticize pain and suffering for the sake of like writing a song, you know. And it's something that I find not doing that extremely hard, if I'm honest.
Okay, it certainly doesn't come across. As I said, I've been listening to the album today, and it doesn't come across to me as I listen to it. But I suppose you know what you're putting down far better than the actual listener does. So it's, yeah, okay. Yeah, it comes across as sincere and very moving at times. As I said, you mentioned Sipping Through My Fingers, which I'll be playing a little bit later in the show. I mean, that. Yeah, sort of there's listening to the lyrics. I think that comes across as an extremely moving song. You collaborated with Sam Duckworth on this album. And how did that come about? And how different was it to the way that you've worked on previous albums?
I re-signed a publishing deal during lockdown, and we were talking to a few different companies, and there was a lady called Kiara at BMG who just emailed me one. We were speaking, I'd met her, and she emailed me one morning going, "You should meet Get Cape, Wear Cape, Fly." I was like, "Cool, I'd love to. I know he's a legend of the game." And we met up in London Fields. We spoke for an hour. We clicked on pretty much everything. We immediately became very close. I sent him a voice memo about an hour later, and he replied 2 hours later with a full studio version of him playing electric guitar and strings and organs on top of this song. I was like, oh my God, this sounds so good. And so I invited him to the studio the next day, and I was like, let's write a song. I had a song idea that was a start. I had the embryo of a song called Oh My God, Please, which is on the album. He helped me finish it in a very beautiful, graceful, considered and emotionally assiduous way. And we were up and running. I was just like, it became quickly clear to me that he was the guy to produce the album. And I think in answer to your question, the difference between working with him is I believe that all producers are artists. You know, the music industry has certain terms for artists, producers, A&Rs, whatever. But yeah. I really think all human beings are artists. But in terms of what we would understand as an artist, Sam was an artist, or Get Cape, Wear Cape was an artist first and foremost. And he just happens to be an exceptional producer, and he's got really good at producing and making records throughout his career. So the difference was I had a fellow artist steering the ship with me, which obviously meant at times it was, you know, extremely intense and kind of hectic, and we never fought or butted heads, but it was, people had to almost drag us out of the studio. People thought we were crazy, because Sam would be in there for 23 hours at a time.
Wow.
And we'd be crying into each other's arms in the car park of a freezing studio in the middle of Hackney at 2 a.m. Like, it was intense, but we made that deal with each other. We went in and we went extremely hard, you know, and Sam was willing to be vulnerable and honest and bring and not hide any of his character or spirit away from the process, regardless of the shade of that corner of his character or spirit.
I can't imagine there's many artists that can say that their producer and they have got to that point in the recording process. So that must have been fairly different and quite, yeah, inspiring by the sound of it.
It was. I love him so much.
You also got to visit Southend. Obviously, we're an Essex radio station. Yeah. So, yeah. How were your visits to the seaside?
I loved it. I love Southend, man. I stayed on... I stayed at a place called Beach's Guest House on the beach there in Southend, and you should get in touch with Get Cape, man. His studio there is beautiful, and there's an amazing community. You know, Lydia Cato's there, an artist from Essex called Blab, who's on the come up, is there. You know, a real host of people, and I loved it. We did a lot of recording for the album there, a few overdubs and kind of intense final vocal takes and stuff. Some of the songs, man, honestly, I must have sung them like 20 times, but me and Sam were just like, we're going to get this right. You know, so I love it there, man. It's really nice to be out of London. There's a freedom to working there. Sam is, when I'm working with Sam, it's on, basically. It's like, we're going in. There's no half measures with Sam.
You've got a tour coming up, a pretty grueling one. February, I think you're playing every single night apart from three, and you're touring the whole of the country. I mean, how much have you missed playing live? How important is that to you? I mean, your fans are a big part of sort of why you do this. I know that from interviews that I've read, and the sort of it's a very much a two-way interaction between you and your fans. So, I mean, how much have you missed it?
Yeah, I've really missed it, man. You know, I've been speaking to a few people about this recently, and you know, just before the pandemic hit, we did like 2 months in the States, and then like maybe 2 weeks in the UK, where we went up to the Highlands, Galashiels, Banbury, and Perth, and like these beautiful places I'd never been before. And I love performing, and you know, I've loved it for 10 years. Yes, it can be tiring sometimes, but I'm lucky that I've got a really great crew of friends and family who come with me, and I consider. I don't really like the word fans. I know we use it, but like the fellow human beings who come to the shows, yeah, you know, great. And so many couples come, man. So many people are like, we were at uni 10 years ago and we got married to your song, or we conceived a child to your song, or this or that or the other, you know, and it's a beautiful thing to hear. And I think because the world's been on shutdown for so long, I think some of these shows that are going to happen with all kinds of different artists could be magical events. And also there's certain artists, some that I'm friends with, who've basically got famous during lockdown without playing a single show. And I think for them in particular, going and stepping on stage at Shepherd's Bush Empire or wherever is going to be just magical.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to get back to. I mean, I've done a few socially distant gigs. I don't know if you've done any of those, but I mean, they're good, but they're not quite the same. Though I did cry at my first one.
Yeah.
I'll have my hands up to that.
I nearly did as well. I've done one. I went to see a band called Heights, and my friend Tamzine was supporting them, and they were just great, man. Love that band, love those guys, and yeah.
So just quickly before we wrap up, going back to the album, I mean, it's Carry a Whale. What I've read is it's that carrying a whale is incredibly difficult, but it's a really positive thing. And so there's a huge message of hope running through this album. I mean, sort of, what would you say that for you the message behind the album is?
To me, the album is an observation on what it's like to live with something that's heavy, but that can be held if you know what you're holding, and to treat it with love and care and respect, but also keep an eye on it to make sure that it doesn't squash you, which it can. And for me, as I've said in many interviews, that thing that I'm holding is you know, sober addiction, basically. And, you know, very grateful and lucky that one day at a time, I haven't found it necessary to take a drug or a drink in over 3 years. But it's still on me. You know, I've still got that thing. I don't have immunity from triggering the allergy if I put one in me. So it's, yeah, there is hope in it. And it's like, I can carry this thing. It's beautiful. It's heavy. It's powerful. It's a beast of its own. But, you know, that's just my deal, man. Everyone's got different experiences, and I definitely don't judge or don't think that alcohol or drugs are inherently evil. I just know from experience that one is one sip or one whatever is too much for me, and sets up a string of events that end in chaos.
Thank you for that. I'm going to play one of the tracks from the album, which is Slipping Through My Fingers, and it's a gorgeous piano-led number. Is there a story behind this song? Well, obviously there is, and that's a stupid question. can you share the story behind this?
I remember being 6 years old, and my dad and his girlfriend at the time used to take me and my sister to a place in Montana where people rode horses and stuff. And I remember sat by the horses, I was picking up this sand, And I always wanted to be a movie director when I was that young. So I wanted to, I loved the idea of like putting beauty and intensity into the world. I remember picking up this sand on this ranch in Montana and just constantly watching it fall from my fingers, fall from my fingers, fall, just like this really, and imagining it slow motion with a really sad song. So that's where the seed of that song came from. And it, and it's kind of an observation on that feeling, where that feeling as an adult can lead to chaos. Because the opening lines, I always felt like life was slipping through my fingers. So I've always loved like I was running out of time, you know, and then countering that with, it's nothing like the movies. It's nothing like you think about my career and addiction. You know, it's nothing like the movies. It's nothing like you think. You'll find me at the party crying at the sink, you know. So it's a sad song just about that feeling of like, I've ruined it all. I've ruined it all. There's nothing left, blah, blah, blah. You know, kind of very self-piteous thinking, which I have to be really careful of, because that self-piteous thinking is still self, and when my experiences of me running on self avails me absolutely nothing, and when I put myself in the middle of my own life, I end up sick really fast.
Thank you very much for your time today. If you want to see Benjamin live, he's playing Lafayette in London on the 2nd of February and Colchester on the 18th next year, and you can find all of the dates on the website benjaminfrancislefkowitz.com. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. I could ask you loads more questions, but I need to let you get on. So thank you very much for your time. And as I said, from the album To Carry a Whale, this is Slipping Through My Fingers.
Life was slipping through my fingers. So I've always loved like I was running out of time. Since I was a kid, I've been all weird and worried a lot. Cause I did my best to escape until I forgot. It's nothing like the movies. It's nothing like you think. You'll find me at the party crying at the sink. I know about that broken feeling when you say, what a time to be alive, to be alive, hummingbird. I've always dreamt perfect teeth. I had no reason to believe, make believe. But I know about those mornings, that crying in the car. You swore you just a rebound, it's clearly just a space where you hide to feel alive, to feel alive, hummingbird. Picture's imperfect, but it never shows. Look alive.